I'd like you to close your eyes for a moment, please, and imagine that it's 2,000 years ago. You're at home having breakfast, and you pick up a copy of the Nazareth Gazette. It's an unfortunate time for you because you're unemployed. And in the Nazareth Gazette, in the small ads, you read this. Carpenter seeks disciples. No formal qualifications required, as full on-the-job training will be provided. After a 3-year apprenticeship, you and your fellow trainees will take on full responsibility for global recruitment. You will be expected to work 24/7, and your priorities must be clear. Employer first and family second, always. Working conditions are likely to be hostile and dangerous. You may expect to be ignored, mocked, sent to places you really don't want to go, shipwrecked, tried before kangaroo courts, imprisoned, beaten, stoned to death, or crucified. This is an entirely voluntary position, so no pay or pension package is available, although death in service benefits are second to none. And I wonder, if we read that, how many of us would rush to find the employer? Probably not a lot. And yet we are all volunteers, aren't we? We are all volunteers to follow the carpenter. And so that was a job description. That is basically what Jesus says to us in Matthew chapter 10, the Great Commission, and he then explains what they might reasonably expect as his disciples. And our passage today is by way of an encouragement. At first reading, it doesn't look very encouraging. It talks of family division and things like that. But that is Jesus's encouragement to us. He warns us that this is going to happen, but he says it will be all right because God loves you. There are a number of stories in the papers recently that caught my eye as I was thinking about the sermon today. The story of Miriam Ibrahim, who was had to give birth in chains in Omdurman prison on the outskirts of Khartoum. Reason that she had to give birth in chains in prison was because she refused to renounce her Christianity. Also in that part of the world, the Al-Shabaab terrorist group are advocating cross amputation for Christians. That's when they chop off one foot and the opposite hand. That's the sort of opposition that Christians in other parts of the world are facing. And yet they are remaining faithful. There are a lot of other examples closer to home. People who have lost their job, lost their livelihood, because they stand by their Christian beliefs. And we have to ask ourselves, don't we? If I was in that position, how would I cope with it? It's very difficult, because I don't believe you can prejudge it. We can say, oh yes, I'd be there. But actually, would we? We have to ask ourselves. So, my theme this morning is the big C, commitment. A word which strikes fear into the lives of many. I went to a wedding a number of years ago, and the best man was talking in his speech about the attributes of a good marriage. And he decided that one of them was commitment. And he gave us two examples of commitment. Looking at the bride and groom, he said, well, you could say that she committed murder, or possibly that he was committed to a mental institute. And so he said, we can see that commitment is actually no fun. And commitment, while it can be fun, it is a commitment. There is a cost to commitment. It ties you down. It limits your choices. Once you're committed to one thing, you can't do another thing. It's what my economics teacher always taught me was the opportunity cost. The fact that you use your time, your money, your energy in one way means you can't use it in another way. Commitment can be uncomfortable. We can end up doing something that actually we don't want to do, because at one stage we say, yes, I will do that. I will commit to do that. But then over a period of time, we lose the will to do that or the desire to do that. But because we made that commitment, later on, we have to do it. And if you were to read the earlier part of our chapter from Matthew this morning, you would read a lot of other costs to the commitment that Jesus was asking his disciples to make. But in our reading today, having explained all the downsides, all the things, the hard things that they're likely to face, Jesus says, do not be afraid of them. Do not be afraid of this commitment, because the people who are going to make your life uncomfortable are not to be feared. He says they can destroy your body. And to us nowadays, that sounds bad enough, because we all too frequently think that actually this is what is all about. But Jesus says, verse 28, the one who can destroy the body and the soul, he's the one to be feared. Now, often when we read this passage, it's very easy to think that he's referring to the devil here, but he isn't. He's referring to God. There's a clue in the fact that the word one has a capital O at the beginning of it. But also, we're not told in the Bible to fear the devil. We're told to flee from him. We're told to rebuke him. We're not taught to fear him, because Jesus has the victory. It says in Proverbs 1 verse 7, fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And that's the fear that Matthew's talking about here in verse 28. Fear the one who can destroy the body and the soul. Fear God. And it doesn't literally mean fear. That's a modern translation of the word. It's more love, respect, or obedience to God. Not literally that we should be afraid of him, because no loving father would want their child to be afraid. And Jesus goes on to say in verses 29 to 31, that we have nothing to fear from our loving God. We are much more valuable than the sparrows. He knows the number of hairs on our head. That is how interested he is in us, how much he loves us, and he will protect us. So, knowing that we have this protection, but knowing that we have all these things which will be ranged against us when we do his work, what is it that holds us back? Dr. Charles Stanley, an American Baptist pastor who founded an organization called In Touch Ministries, said this: "Too many Christians have a commitment of convenience. They'll stay faithful as long as it is safe and doesn't involve risk. Instead of standing alone in the face of challenge and temptation, they check to see which way their friends are going." We're not promised an easy ride. People think that, you know, Christianity means that life is just a breeze. Not true. It means that we are committed to do a lot of hard work, to make some tough decisions. We are committed to taking a stand. We're committed to going against the flow. When the world heads in one direction, we need to be ready to go in the other direction, if that is God's will, if that is the right thing for us to do. And we're called to do this daily. He said in our reading today, take up your cross. And that's what we need to do. Take up our cross daily and follow him, ignoring what the rest of the world does, but showing the rest of the world by our example who it is that we follow. So what is your cross? Well, that's a question really that only you can answer. Answer it through, or discover the answer, through prayer, through Bible study, and through doing God's work. Because as we use our talents for him, he will give us more talents. He will refine us. He will teach us. He will lead us. In Luke 18, the story of the rich young ruler, he comes to Jesus and he says, "What must I do?" And Jesus says, "You must read the word, you must pray, you must obey the laws." And the ruler says, "That I've done since I was a young man. So what must I do now?" And Jesus says, "One thing you lack. Go sell everything and come follow me." But the ruler goes away with a sad face. What is it that he's lacking? I would suggest that it is commitment. It is trust in the Lord. He's comfortable when he's got his money, his power. But when he's asked to give it up and follow Jesus, he can't bring himself to do it. We're called to do tough things. We're called to make tough decisions. The decisions we're called to make are countercultural because we're not deciding to do things for ourselves, for our own material benefit, for our own comfort. We're called to do things for God. Wonderful quote from Mother Teresa. She said, "I have found the paradox that if you love until it hurts, there can be no more hurt, only more love." In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus warns us, warns his disciples, and he warns us today that things were going to be difficult. We were going to suffer. Are we suffering? It's a question which you have to ask, you have to answer for yourself. Am I suffering? Is my faith costing me anything? If it isn't, then to me, it begs the question, am I doing it right? If it's not costing me, am I doing it right? I'm not suggesting that we should all go and put ourselves in terrible danger, but we need to be pushing the boundaries, don't we? Because that's how we grow. James wrote, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance." We need to rejoice in the trials. Verses 32 and 33 of our reading today, Jesus said, "Whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven." I just want to take that word, acknowledge, and I want to take it out of its context from the reading today and just think about it as we might use it in everyday conversation. If I meet somebody and they acknowledge me, it's as if they're saying, "Oh, no, there's Christopher." Is that what we want Jesus to do to us when we get to heaven? Do we want him to say, "Oh, there's Christopher"? Or do we want him to come up to us, put his arm around us and say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant"? I know what I'd rather do. And so, can I encourage you just to think about your faith, what it costs you, what you do with it? A little commitment inventory, if you like. You can be a pillar of the church, but in a building, a pillar supports it inside. That's one way of serving, and it's a very valid way of serving, and we're very blessed in this church with the number of people who serve within the church, helping out in many, many capacities. But if we're a pillar of the church, are we acknowledging God before men? Or are we acknowledging God before the congregation? If you look at some of the larger churches, we don't have one here, you have a bit built on the outside, a buttress which supports the church from the outside. If people come into church, they'll see the pillars. If they don't come into church, they're only going to see the buttresses. We need to be both. We need to be pillars and buttresses. So, my message today, the thing which I've taken away from this reading, is that I need to do and continue to do this little commitment audit. Am I pushing the boundaries for God in my life? Amen.